on the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Let's roll. Co-pilot on the passenger side. You so fly. Yeah. She so lit. We so high. Just me and my chick. Yeah. Just me and my chick. Yeah. Co-pilot on the passenger side. You so fly. Yeah. She so lit. We so high. Just me and my chick. Yeah. Just me and my chick. Yeah. She give me eggs.
Yo, 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 what up, y'all? Welcome to another one, man. This is your boy, Ra One, and this is Sparking Conversation. And y'all know what I do each and every week, man. I get up here and I talk to some of the world's most interesting people. And tonight, I'm gonna do that again, just like I do each and every week, right? Tonight is going to be very interesting, right? Because here's the thing. My guest that I have coming up on a little later on, she's been on the platform at least 2 times already, right? You know, because on the platform, Sparking Conversation, y'all know what I do. Like I said, I talk to some of the world's most interesting people. And a lot of times, the things that people go through are a lot of things that it seems like at times. It's a narrative that it happens a lot. But then sometimes when people are going through things at that particular time, it makes it seem like they're the only ones that's going through it. And in some instances, sometimes they be the only ones to get justice as well, too. So we're going to talk about that tonight, right? We're going to talk about one of the people who was able to get justice for the things that were wrongfully done to their relative. And listen, I want to be completely clear, because there's a narrative that's been painted all over the world about our relationship between being a civilian and law enforcement. Racism and law enforcement have been existing since law enforcement existed. Like, we know the history of the law. We know the history of why the police was even created in the first place. In so many instances, we could look at that and say, yo, this is the reason why they created the police. And then there's a lot of times where for some people, they wouldn't even be here no more if they couldn't call the police. But then there are some people who are not here no more because of the police. Hey, listen, let me just say, out of all the things that we have to deal with as human beings, that's one of the things that it seems like, you know, it's just random, but it's just wrong, right? That the one person who is paid to protect you is the person that winds up harming you the most. And it's sad. Right? Because that happens to everybody on all levels. Even when it comes down to your family, there are so many people that are holding on to things and secrets and all the things that has happened to them that was done to them by people who are supposed to love them and supposed to protect them and supposed to guide them. They're the ones who gave them this trauma that they live with throughout their life. And, you know, sadly enough, y'all, it's not being brought to the forefront enough. But tonight, we're going to talk a little bit about that justice that has been given to people who feel like they could do whatever they want. You know, people that feel like they're above the law because they are the law, right? So we're going to talk about that. So before I go too far in that, y'all know what I got to do. I have to give it up to all the people that rock out. Y'all know that I am so proud of Kill No One Part 1 because we have reached 15,000 views. It's only been out for 2 months now, and it ain't really quite 2 months. And, you know, when it come around to next week, it'll be 2 months exactly. But, you know, that means it's just going to keep on going and keep on growing. So thank y'all, man, for supporting your boy, man, out here, yo, because I'm telling y'all, I have a real passion for creating and being creative, and I feel like that's the way I want to spend my life. I know there's so many people who doubt me. There's so many people who have watched me go through different transitions in life and always looked at that as probably being confused, it seems like, to them, or, you know, not necessarily knowing what I want, just throwing things against the wall just to see what stick. But no, like, each thing led me up to the next thing. And that's what I'm most thankful about. Like, you know, there's a lot of things that people do every day that they have to do. Very seldom do people put in the work to do the things that they want to do and want to do consistently. See, that's a different type of mentality. That's a different type of hustle for the people who just do what they have to do for right now to change their life, to do the things that they want to do. And the things that I want to do is I want to continuously be creative, because I've been that since I've been born. Since I can remember, I've been in a situation where I've been allowed to be creative. And during those times of being creative, it kept me out of all kind of trouble. And I think that if a lot of us would get into the things that were given to us, the things that we don't have to, you know, that we don't have to pursue, it's just naturally in us. And then for some of us, we're able to do things that if we did pursue, like a extra, you know, level of education with it. Like, you know, some people could cut hair really good. They don't even need to go to a barber school. But if they go to the barber school, they can get the license and they can open up the business legitly and do all that, not just be cutting hair out their house for the rest of their life, even though they could do that too, right? But at the end of the day, at some point, you want to level up, you know? What if you want a franchise, you know what I mean? Stuff like that. Like, just thinking past what you could do for yourself right now, you know? Thinking about generational wealth. So that's what I'm thinking about, and that's why I love to be creative. So shout out to all of y'all. That's Push Play on Kill No One Part 1. Kill No One Part 2 comes out this month, right? July 29th. Man, I just want y'all to run the numbers up on that one. If y'all like Part 1, I hope y'all like Part 2, right? So thank y'all. Bet. So we got to give it up for Collective Wear as well. Y'all know what to do, man. Shop with us, man. Shop with me, man. Y'all know the vibe. The link is in the description. All y'all do is click the link and hit shop, man. If you guys want to support the platform, man, I have new designs. If you want to support, you know, get you a t-shirt or whatever you need to do to support the platform, I would definitely appreciate it. And I also would appreciate you rocking the gear and just being around wherever you from, because we get it to you, right? So thank y'all all in advance for supporting the brand, all right? But Lit Sticks, y'all know the vibes with Lit Sticks, man. They come into an event near you. They come into everywhere. I'm telling y'all, it's time for us to change the game, man. You know, in my community especially, we've been plagued and been ran down on something that has been just a part of everybody's everything for the longest time, and it has been used against us in our community for the longest. And now to be on the other side of it, where you can actually legally put yourself in a space where you can, you know, make money off of it. I salute the company of Lit Sticks and salute them for even picking me to be a platform to want to even mention them and to get it out there to the people, right? So definitely double shout out to them. Best. All right. So now that that's out the way, let me start off like this. I know it seemed like I'm all over the place with the show, because I normally jump right on and I start thanking all the people that download the audio version of this platform. Let me make sure I say that. I never want to get in the show and not thank y'all, because I really appreciate y'all, all right? Excuse me. But I want to talk a little bit about, first off, I want to say my condolences to all of the people that has been dealing with the traumatic events of the floods, okay? The floods in Texas and the ones in North Carolina, because they happened simultaneously. And look, y'all, I was reading earlier, you know, at first, whenever the reports came out, it was like around a number of like 25 casualties, and I mean, that's still a lot, you know, children and all the other stuff involved, man, right? So it's still a lot. But in comparison to what they're figuring out now, it's crazy. It's 100 plus. It's over 100, right? People have been found unalive by this flood. And I just want to say, y'all, like, there's been so many different people out here that have their own theories of how this even happened, right? weather manipulation, you know, things that are being done on purpose to take people's property from them in order for them to be able to use it to mine or do whatever they need to do in the area. Because a lot of times people live in areas just because of the price, not knowing that it's a lot of natural things that are, might be in the area that they pick to live, right? And so with that being said, man, it's looking like it was done on purpose to a lot of people. So in that event, if that is the case, right, because we have to use the words allegedly, because, you know, we get on these platforms and we speak our truth, right? And we always got to be mindful of how we say things, because, look, people know the truth, right? And no matter how you want to spin it, yo, this just seems so unnatural. Not that rain and flooding is unnatural, but this, what happened, seems very unnatural. And to be honest, a lot of things, ever since Katrina and a whole lot of other things, it just seemed very unnatural, right? But I want y'all to think about this for all the people that's separated out here, for all the people who don't get along with their family, to all the people who think that because you decide to live a lifestyle where you build your own family versus just suffering through things as a person or as a couple or as a whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like, for all of y'all out there, I want y'all to know this, yo. If all the people out there who have their theories that saying that, you know, the heart machine or the government or whoever is involved with doing all these things, right, that are harming the people by using weather manipulation and all, I want y'all to know, if that's the case, can y'all imagine, like, how many people that are in charge of whatever that would be who get funded by taxpayer dollars, and we pay these people to not to harm us? Like, I just want y'all to put that in perspective. Whenever you guys feel like you want to be against each other, sometimes you got to turn that thing around and pay attention to the things that you have in common. And one of the things that we all have in common, no matter what your skin color is, if you're not them, then you are one of the people that is going to be affected by the things that they want to do. And if you think about it, the things that they want to do, if this is true, right? If this is not natural rain that caused the floods in Texas and North Carolina, if it's not, right? And if it really is the people playing with those machines and doing whatever they can so they can take people's land and do all that other shit from them. If that's the case, the way that these people are dying, you know what I mean? Like, the way that this is taking lives and children's lives and livestock and all of these other things just taken from people, like, they have no regard for life, y'all. Can y'all imagine? And these are the people who are these elected officials. These are the people that y'all go vote for. These are the people who you don't vote for, who get a salary based on the money that they take from y'all. And so many of y'all out there were so against the whole, oh no, they shouldn't be taking income tax from people that make less than $150,000. And all y'all was mad about that. Y'all just crying like, no, they should take taxes, because, like, just to be against all this other shit. And then now y'all see, like, the way they could do all this stuff is because they have your money. And y'all don't even see that. We pay for them to destroy us, right? Involuntarily. That is crazy. No matter how you want to spin it, y'all, no matter how you want to look at life right now, you know, you got to have empathy for the people who lost their lives. You got to have empathy for the people who lost their family members, right? You got to have empathy for the people who lost their property. It's that much evil in the world that'll do something like that. Damn, at the same time, do you have to have empathy for the enemy? Think about this, right? Think about how much hate can consume you because of the things that happen to you, and what that will make you no different than the person that you hate. Ain't that foul? Kinda. In a lot of ways, because, you know, we hear eye for eye, you know, tooth for a tooth and all that other shit. But, you know, when it comes down to it, the energy that you have to put into having that type of mentality and keeping that mentality and really harboring those type of feelings because of something that's been done to you. Man, it's so taxing on your body, man. It's so taxing on your spirit. And another thing is the fact that there's a way that we can help each other in times of need like this. It's just the fact that we can't always be a bunch of people in need, if that makes sense to y'all. So what I want to do is, you know, I'm going to transition because I have my guest waiting. I'm going to bring my guest on, right? Because what I want to talk, what we're going to talk about tonight, we had Miss Elaine Simons on before. Like I said, we had on a couple of times and, you know, the both other times that we had her on, it was in between. It was like in the beginning, it was like the jury selection and getting everything together to even go to trial to figure out what's going to happen with the police officer that underlived her foster son. Then after we, you know, went through everything and she went through all the trial and everything happened, you know, we came back and we had another conversation about the trial. So now she's back, right? Impacted Families, y'all know the vibe. If y'all watching right now, y'all should all be sharing this live because a lot of information that she's going to be able to give y'all is going to be information that you guys can actually use going forward. Now, here's the thing. Tonight's conversation is going to be more so about what happened after the trial. And that's why I feel like tonight's conversation is so important, because there are so many people out here who have lost hope in the whole everything, the justice system, the whole everything. People do not have no faith in none of that going on outside that even deal with DC and everybody around it and everybody dealing with it. They lost all faith for them because of everything that's been going on. You don't know who to trust, because the one thing that we do know is that no matter who you put your trust in, they can care less about you. And that's foul. So we got to care about each other. But tonight's conversation is going to be one of those that I hope a lot of y'all out there get information from, right? Because some people or a lot of people have been able to get away with a lot of things when it comes to just the dismantling of people's family and then go home to their family. So we're going to talk about that tonight. So let me bring my guests up real quick so we can get to it. Hello, hello. How you doing?
Hello, nice to see you again.
You're muted.
Thank you.
We can't hear you. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, it sounds like your mic is muted again. You don't have it in this time, so I don't know.
Can you hear me?
There you go. Say something. Okay, no, it went away real quick. Do whatever you just did.
Hello?
There you go. Say something.
Hi.
Oh, yeah. Dang, I don't know what's going on. Oh. Okay, so we gotta get it together because just a little something going on with the mic issue, but we're going to figure it out, all right, because we got to get this information out. I noticed that, you know, when there's a lot of things going on that require you to really get some things out, you got to deal with a few things. So all of y'all that's on live right now, just bear with us real quick. We had everything set before the show started, but y'all know how these things go. So just bear with us for a second. We're going to get this going. I bet. Say something, Elaine. Let's see.
Hi.
Okay, yeah. It's still not coming through. Hold on.
That's weird, because I took the thing off.
Let me see. To anybody that's watching right now, with Elaine, can y'all hear Elaine at all? Elaine, say anything.
Hi, say can my friends and supporters hear me?
I don't know what's going on.
The unmute.
Yeah. So we're gonna figure this out. You know, last time it was the headphones, and then everything came through clear. So they're not in right now. That's different. I don't know. So those of y'all that's watching real quick, I want y'all to jump in real quick. Just let me know if y'all can hear us. If you can hear me, let me know. I want to make sure that everything is good, because I see a few of y'all watching. Let's see.
Can you guys hear me?
Okay. Nobody wants to let me know. All right, bet. I feel y'all. Y'all ain't feeling me right now. All right, bet. But we're going to make it work, though. Hold on for a second. Elaine, so look, let's do this. Whatever your mic, whatever the button is that you have for your mic or whatever, what we probably going to have to do is that we probably going to have you jump out and jump back in, and let's see if that works, all right? Okay. So I'm bring you down to the studio. Just sign out and then sign back in and see if that works. All right, bet. So while she's doing that, I want to talk a little bit more about what happened. So when you guys really kind of think about this, man, at this particular stage in the game, we no longer have the luxury of just being able to look at each other, look at the things that we have different, and then a whole lot, you know, just use those as a means to not work together. Because if you kind of think about it, y'all, the weather can strike anywhere now. You know, things that are happening to places that it wouldn't normally happen at is happening. Look, it was snowing in Florida. Can you imagine? Like, so it's a lot of things happening out here in the world, y'all, that it just doesn't seem right, man. It doesn't seem normal. And it seems like it's somebody playing with our tops. And we too busy fighting each other to even pay attention to the things that are going on. All right, let's see. Let's see, we got Elaine back. All right, let's try this again.
Can you hear me?
Dad, it's still doing the same thing. That is crazy.
It worked before.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm really disappointed in StreamYard right now because I really don't understand. You were perfect before this show. Yeah. So look, y'all, we gonna try to figure this out, all right? Because you know, the microphone, everything was good before the show. So, and plus, you know, what she got to talk about tonight, probably they don't want that information to go on now. Probably, and here I go thinking that, you know what I'm saying? Like, yo, I'm just staying consistent and just doing the right thing, you know, living in my purpose and all that other shit, you know. But that doesn't mean that real opposition is not out there when it comes down to my content. Because I do realize that my, you know, podcast stuff, it doesn't get as many views as it was getting at one point. You know, whenever I get to popping that real shit, I notice that the views are less. And then so, yeah, it's just one of them things. So, you know, you got to keep pushing, right? You can't go by the views. And plus, we know that this is podcasting, right? So this is an audio game. So I'm still streaming really well. Like, people are still downloading the audio version. So that's what's most important. So, again, I can't even really blame, you know, or count the views of, you know, what would go on, like, on social media when it comes to the clips and stuff like that. I can't really get in my feelings about it because technically what I'm doing right now is for audio. And this part of it, the visual part and all that, it's a bonus. Right? It's the bonus part. It's the part that can help you get, you know, if people really, you know what I'm saying, rock with it and move it around. But hey, sometimes when you're not talking about things that are entertainment based, and you know, if you're not talking about things that's salacious and you're not really with the mess, you know, you gotta, like me, you gotta build your audience, and your audience got to know what you're coming with. So that way, every time they check for you, you know, they know they're going to get some substance. Let's see if we can get Elaine back in here, y'all, and see what's going on. All right, Elaine, say something for me real quick. Let's see. Let's try this again.
Hi. Right.
It's still...
the
guests can hear you.
They can hear me.
Oh, they can hear you. It's just me. I can't hear you.
Maybe it's your ear.
Oh, okay. Hold on, because let me say something. Because
Dawn, can you still hear me? I'm seeing you on my text.
Let me Let me make sure I'm doing the right thing.
Don, can you hear me? If people can hear me, text me and let me know.
Okay, hold on. Let me just restart my browser real quick and make sure it ain't that, because that's crazy. Hold on 1 second. Let me see something. Elaine, so everybody can hear you. It's just me up here can't hear.
Yep.
Let's see. I might have to change my headphones. Let me see.
In the meantime, hi, everybody. My name is Elaine Simon.
I can hear you. Now I can hear you. Hold on. Let me get this together. My headphones. It's my headphones. Okay. So now I got to put on. Now I got to put on the first headphones I ever had, and that is crazy right now. So hold on 1 second.
We thought it was my headphones. Probably
we thought it was you the whole time, and it was me the whole time. So hold on. Oh, this is going to be so ugly. But I can hear you.
Thanks for your patience, everyone.
Yeah, please. Thank y'all. I appreciate y'all, man. This is crazy. I'm bugging. So I might as well take these off. It's okay. Okay. Back. So look, Elaine, how you doing? Listen, I apologize, y'all. I'm bugging, man. This is crazy, right? All right, so let's do this. Go ahead and introduce yourself to the audience and let them know why you're on the platform this evening.
Good evening, everybody. This is Elaine Simons out of Seattle, Washington. And this is my third time back on Spark It Conversation. And it's really exciting because this has been a long journey from 2019 to currently where I am in the fight for justice and accountability for families that have lost their loved ones to police violence.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it's been a common theme for a while, right? People suffering by the hands of the police. And you know, in most instances, justice is never served. So with us following you and the story that you've been, you know, so gracious to bless us with, and you know, throughout the road of just traveling with this thing, you know, you were able to receive justice. And I think that's what we all should understand, because there's a lot of people who are not getting justice right now. They're not getting the help they need. They're not getting the answers they need. They're just getting the runaround. Everything that in the law takes time. They're not fast about nothing but giving you the time. But when it comes down to you actually needing them for you, it's never that. But you, on the other hand, have been able to see it from the other end. So let's talk a little bit about that. So first of all, let's tell the audience and stuff how you were able to get justice. Like, what type of justice was served to the officer that unalived your foster son?
Well, it took 6 years. And so to any family that's in the fight, that's actually quite a short window. There are people that have been out there in that fight for over 20 years, 15 years, 10 years. And so it depends on a few things. In our community, it was an initiated ballot that helped move this needle forward. And that was called I-940. And when that was passed in 2018, by families that don't benefit from it. So any families from 2019 earlier, this new law didn't benefit them. Jesse was murdered May 31st, 2019. So he was murdered on the right side of history.
Right.
And when he was first murdered, we really, like many families, what do? We want to grieve. We don't want to talk to the media. The media is showing things that, you know, are like, wait a minute, that's not who Jesse was. And so it started off kind of on a rough start. But as time moved forward, I always like to say that George Floyd's murder was the catalyst for systemic change across the nation. And the reason I say that was it started to give a voice nationally. And all of a sudden we were talking to one another. Families were communicating. We were meeting one another. And our family was approached by the King County Prosecution Office. And at that time, I thought that was normal. I thought every family has a visit from the prosecution. And so I met with them. I sat down with them and I was thinking, oh, wow, this is really cool. This is how the system is supposed to work. Well, I didn't know at that time there was a thing called an inquest. And an inquest in Washington State is where they do a preliminary trial to see if it goes forward to a real trial. And that was shut down. There were too many problems with it. But I thought that's what we were going through. I thought we were in the inquest. But in reality, they said to us, we are looking into this case. We want to bring charges against your son's murderer, former police officer Jeff Nelson. Wow. And I was floored. I had no idea what that meant. And then we hit COVID. Then George Floyd was murdered. And time kept going forward and we kept, you know, I kept writing the prosecution. What's happening? You know, we're almost a year out now. So when he was formally arrested, which was 2020, we went to the arraignment, and at the arraignment, it was heavily police presence. They were blocking the door, and I'm just going to say it like it is. I'm a feisty, small Jewish woman, and nobody's going to keep my family outside the door. So I walked to the front in front of these big cops. And then when my family came, I started shooing them in because I didn't know what we were walking inside to. Right. And so at first we sat on the defense side because nobody teaches you the protocol that there's the prosecution and the defense. But as an abolitionist, I'm always on the defense side. I'm always on the side of people that are, you know, aren't guilty. And yet we're now on the prosecution side. We want to get someone found guilty. So at arraignment, it was noted that he was not going to be held and there was no bail. So I had an opportunity to make my first public statement, and that was to call that out, to say anyone else charged with second degree murder and first degree assault that is not a police officer would have at least a $1.5 million bail and be taken into jail. And right. I won that ruling. And the judge ruled $500,000. They arrested him, took him in, but he made bail by 5 p.m. But we got to see a police officer handcuffed and taken into jail. For the next 4 years, he was on paid administrative house arrest. And this is where I give families, this is what is the most important part of this journey. If you get to this point that you're going to have a trial, do not ever miss a hearing. Mm. Now, we were fortunate. It went through COVID, so we didn't have to go in person. Because that would have been a hardship for somebody that has to work, whatever. So it was always by Zoom. We were able to come to every hearing. So if I was working and I knew there was a hearing, I always let my boss know. I said, I'm going to need someone to cover my classroom for an hour. Or I'm going to need to, you know, whatever, because I'm not going to miss a hearing. And so have a point person. Make sure there's always somebody that you trust in that hearing. Because when you get to the trial And you're like, well, where's his tattoos? Why is his tattoos not being shown? Well, they were redacted. Every single tattoo on that man's body was not allowed in the trial. So if I didn't go to the hearing and I went to the trial, I would have been like, where's his tattoos? Why is that left out? And those were very significant. He's a public servant. And those tattoos on his body were taken while he was arrested and in jail. So if he was not a police officer, they would have made it. They would have made it into the trial. But they said that, that would prejudice him. So that is my first thing to say to you. Go to every single hearing. And I know it's a hardship. I know personally, I ended up just retiring a month ago. I'm done. It did something to me that going into the classroom, looking at the system, I just realized that's not where I need to be right now. So we waited and we waited and we waited. And then finally it came forward that we were going to have the trial start in April of 2024.
Wow.
Yeah. So 24 years.
Yeah. Just to get to trial. But, you know, in comparison, though, like, that's, it seems long, but it seems short, too. Right? Because at the end of the day, a lot of times it just don't go that fast, right? Like not in most situations, especially not when it's involving law enforcement, because they have so many ways that they delay things and get this moved around and this evaluation and he had this type of thing. So it'd be a lot of little loopholes that they use all the time to drag things out. So the fact that you guys did get, you know, justice in the way that y'all did is very commendable for the state, you know, because y'all in Washington State, right?
Yeah, our prosecution was very interesting to watch. First of all, there were three private prosecutors. They were not from the county. It started with two county prosecutors, but when COVID opened up, they were reassigned back to their original jobs. And one of them by that time had retired, and the deputy prosecutor had retired. So we had seen a shift. And then our judge was recluse, the first judge. Mm. And then the defense had a new defense. And so all the way on this journey, the faces kept changing. But I was a constant, and Jeff Nelson was a constant. There was always him and I. And I always tell people, there were moments in that courtroom where the only two people who knew the living, breathing Jesse was me and the killer.
Wow.
And so him and I had a real symbiotic relationship. And I say that with all good reason. There was no way we could not acknowledge one another. We were connected for so long. In virtual and then in the real room. Now, the first advice that I got when the trial started, and this is really important for people, go to jury selection. I went, it was 15 days. It was one of the longest jury selections I've ever heard of. And in that 15 days, the questions that they asked, and some of it was kind of funny, because they would say to the police, what is your knowledge, to the jurors, what is your knowledge of BLM? Well, BLM could be Blue Lives Matter or Black Lives Matter. So there was a lot of weird stuff going on there because they kept bringing it up, kind of like trying to find out, are you a BLM on the blue side or are you a BLM on the black side?
Wow.
People, did you go to protests? Are you aware of George Floyd? I mean, the questions were really telling because they wanted to find a jury pool. And you got to understand, we're in South King County. So we're not in Seattle. We're out in the county. We had the most diverse socially economic, racial, age that you can, and gender jury.
Wow.
It was It was an amazing jewelry pool. And the thing is, I did my own ranking. So every time I saw a jeweler I like, I would rank them. And I have a whole book full of all my yes, no, nah, he's a little over there. He, you know, she's a little this. And so I would also rank. But this is what happened. When they started seating the jurors, the number that I had, maybe 121,
right,
became three.
Oh, wow.
And I lost it because once they went into the third chair, I wasn't able to quickly figure out, oh, did I pick three, you know, because he's really 121. So I still haven't unraveled my own mess, but it was still exciting. And so that was our first 15 days. And then the night before the trial was to start, and I don't know if anyone's listening who was there, we were going, Jesse was Buddhist. And so the Buddhist monks were going to come outside and do a kind of like what the Native Americans do, the indigenous community, where they do a staging. They were going to come and do prayer and give us all red bracelets, which I wore for the whole trial, to make it so that they made a prayer onto the place. Well, around 3:30, around noon, I get a phone call. We had two police officers assigned to us, and they were our security, our private security.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so he called me and says, "Miss Simons, we've got a problem. We need to meet with you." And I'm like, okay, we're still in, you know, the hearing process. And he says, can you meet me out front? I'm going to take you for lunch, and we need to discuss something that came up, a security alert. So they got some kind of security alert, but I wasn't sure what the security alert was. So then when I got into his car, and I'm wondering what people are thinking, here's Miss Simons going into a police car, right? And he says, well, we have today's National Police Appreciation Day, and we're having a barbecue at our precinct. Would you want to go to the barbecue? And I was like, oh, hell yes. And I walked in, and you could see the whole police department just kind of like, what the hell is she doing here? Because I was like a known person. It felt so empowering. There was something about y'all aren't going to make me fearful. I am fearless. So we grabbed my bite cheeseburger, but I watched to make sure no one spit in it or did anything to it. And guess what the security alert was?
What?
They thought our vigil, our prayer session, was a call for protest. That we were going to riot in front of the courthouse. And I'm like, are you kidding? Why would we, after 4 years, riot
now?
Sending out this misinformation.
Yeah.
And they end up shorting when I went back to the courthouse, and after I reassure them that there was no problem on our end, the judge says, we're shutting down the courthouse early. There's been a security concern. And so everybody, they shut down the courthouse thinking that we were going to have this big protest.
Wow. Okay?
But it was peaceful. When I got there, it went wonderfully. The cop calls me. He's like, ma'am, we just pulled all of our force off. We're all going home. Have a wonderful prayer.
Wow. So, you know what I was thinking when you were talking about going through this trial and having to be one of the only people that knew your son, you know, your foster son was the other person who unalived him or who killed him or whatever, and how, like you said, y'all were synonymous because y'all were tied together because it was y'all going through the trial, you going through each and every day of being there trying to get justice and him fighting for his life.
Exactly.
And I was thinking, like, yo, man, can you think about the mental? Because, you know, when you said you retired and, you know, you had to really get, and I'm thinking here, and I'm sitting here thinking, and I'm like, yeah, because, you know, you really got to be in, I mean, every day almost, you know, for a certain amount of time. And then, like you said, for years on years, you're connected to the person who hurt you, like who really, really hurt you, right? Because we, you know, a lot of people do things to people and they don't ever think about the family and how they hurt and what happens to them when you do things to their people. And now I'm looking at all the rest of them. I'm thinking about all the other parents that are going through what you're going through now, trying to get justice for their child that's been unalived. And then whenever they do, because there's always a person responsible with a name. And whenever they go through it and they get to the point where they're like you, and they even get to the place where they can have preliminaries and jury selections and all that, how tied to the killer they're going to have to be. And that has to be really nerve-wracking, though.
And the first day of trial was interesting. So the next morning was the first day of trial.
Okay.
And I was supposed to have these orange passes. So that way, whenever any of my people showed up, they could make sure that there were seats, because it's a small courtroom. And we want to make sure family and especially my impacted family members as well that show up, and then any of my community activists and supporters would have seats. Because right. My biggest concern was they were going to fill up their side and our side would then be taken away from us.
Yeah.
And so my fear was that they would overflow onto our side. So when I got there, I saw a long line. I went inside to get myself situated. They had given me a chair to sit in and headphones and really were accommodating for me, because they knew that this woman was about to be here for a long haul and there was no way I could sit in those wooden, you know.
Oh, those benches type thing?
Yeah. There was no way I could sit in that for how long this trial was going to go on. And so the judge came up to me, and it was right before they opened up the door. And she says, "Miss Simons, we owe you an apology." And I said, "What do you mean?" She goes, "We don't have the orange passes for you."
Mm.
And she says, "We're going to go get them. But in the meantime, please go and bring your people in." And so I walked out and I started bringing my people in, and they were cutting in front of anyone that wasn't party to this case. And I missed a couple. And I didn't realize it until later that I didn't see everybody, because I was a little overwhelmed. I was in my own world.
Right.
But we finally all got in there and we got settled. And one of the things, and this, I'm not saying other people have to do what we did, but this is what we decided. No disrespect to Nelson and his people. Nothing, not in the bathroom, not in the hallway, not in the elevator, not in the courtroom. We don't want the jurors to take a look at us, and how we're going to be painted is what they believe we're being painted as.
Gotcha.
Truly, we're whatever. But I'm saying this, it worked for us. I'm not saying other families have to follow this lead. But anyone that came on our side knew I was a strong gatekeeper. That means I saw someone disruptive or do something disrespectful, they were gone. They were not given the same privilege to come in. Even though it's an open courtroom, I made sure that they were not welcome. And that was because I did not want, because the jurors don't know who we are. They don't know who our side is. They don't know that I was his foster mom. All they saw was this lady sitting in a chair. They had no idea my relationship. Remember, we're not introduced.
Right. No, not to them.
Is Nelson
and the jurors. Yeah. And let me say this too, which is really, really important that you say that, because emotions be so high for people who go through certain things. They just want justice, so they got their emotions up. But I think you just said something that was really important. To please to keep control of your emotions. Don't even talk to them. Don't speak to them. Don't even look at them if you don't have to. Like, do everything you can, because, you know, unfortunately, whenever the court takes breaks and all that, you take breaks in the same bathrooms, in the same little common areas as the jurors, and even as
not
the person.
Jurors, thank God. Not the
jurors. The jurors are separate. That's right. Yeah. I did jury duty before too. Yeah, you had to go somewhere off and separate.
But the jurors
the killer
downstairs getting coffee when we're getting coffee.
Well, they're still same thing. Like, you'll be around these people, or even in the person that you're there for. A lot of times people get caught in the elevators with the person that they're actually in court fighting and different things like that. Like, it's when you go into court through things, you have to really be in control of your emotions, because at any given time, you will be in a certain situation that you may unexpect. Like, it's unexpected.
There was a couple times my emotions did come. The thing that helped me was wearing the headphones. That kept me focused. That way, when there was chatter, people were trying to get my attention, that was it. You wait for break time. But there were a couple times where my emotions kind of came forward. Yeah. The first time was introducing Jesse. None of the family members wanted to do it. It was too hard for them. And so the prosecutors asked me to. And there was only one time where I was asked to leave during a hearing before that started. So they asked me to leave the courtroom, and they said that I could not introduce myself as Jesse's foster mom. And I was livid. I said, well, then who the hell am I? Why am I saying this boy lives with me? You know? And so it's such an important point to hold your power as the impacted family inside. I totally can see that. Thank you, Bridget. Mm-hmm. I like seeing the comments. Yeah, if there's any comments or questions, stop me. But so introducing Jesse, I was not allowed to say I was his foster mom. When I got up onto the podium, it was really hard because his brother grew up with me. And so I was able to say that he moved in with his brother Terrell and I, but I couldn't say I was Terrell's foster mom, who lived with me for 11 years. I couldn't say Jesse was my foster son. And so here's this woman that doesn't look like this child.
Right.
Holding up his picture. And I maybe had, I don't know, 60 seconds, and the defense didn't want to ask me any questions. So after the prosecution said, you know, who is this? When's the last time you saw Jesse? I started to say in the funeral home when we brought him his clothes, you know, to wear, because he arrived without any clothing, and they shut that real down real fast. I mean, every time I try to sneak something in, people say, when you do that type of thing, they ask you questions. If you say yes or no, you can't comment. But if you can start commenting, and then they'll say, Ms. Simons, you can move forward. So there were times that they were just like, oh, she's going to blow it. And so after the introduction and I went outside, I was crying. My supporters all came around. I said, I just felt like I failed Jesse. And it was not until weeks later, a stranger came up to me and says that my testimony was the most profound and so important. He said he watched every juror's face, and he could see that somehow I humanized him. But I didn't feel like I humanized him.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of times when you're in the moment, you don't realize things. You're just in the moment. But it was another thing that was very important in there, like, when it comes down to your emotions, when you're dealing with somebody that has wronged you, right? Yeah, you're going to have those moments where, you know, it's going to show. But the point is, though, you got to be willing to be able to hold them at all costs, because, you know, you're going to have your moments. You're going to slip up, because we all human. We all have those days where we slip up in life, period. Right? Everybody don't always make a complete stop at a stop sign. Some people don't always make a complete stop at at the red light. Some people run, you know, like, there's people out here who do things on the edge each and every day. But what I'm saying to us, having emotional intelligence it's really a really is a blessing, because going through something that you guys have gone through at any given time, it could have been something that could have been done out of emotion that would have messed it all up, and also mess it up for people coming behind. Because really, you guys' story and what happened to the cop, because we got to realize that he actually was found guilty and all of these other things, right? So for y'all to even get to that point, you had to be in control of your emotions. So I want to reiterate to all of the people going through it, I know that's one of the toughest things that you'll be able to do, especially when you have to face the person that did it.
Yeah.
Right? Because some of these parents, some of these moms, especially in the, you know, impacted family crew, they're going to see their day in court with these, with the people who unalived their children. And they're going to have to go through it like you did. Right? They're going to have to see the people.
I journal the whole time. I have about 10 journals. So I kept notes. I did my aha moments. When I listened to something in the courtroom, I would write down a question or a clarification, because you got to remember, we're not part of the trial. We're spectators in our own trial. We're not doing anything except sitting there and bearing witness. So right. We're witnesses. And that's really, you know, they said, was there a time where emotions came out, Elaine? And there were a couple times. One was not the autopsy, not even seeing Jesse in that way. It's when they brought out Jesse's personal belongings that have been in bags for 5 years. And I actually felt when they opened up those bags, I felt like he was breathing, like all of a sudden Jesse was there in the courtroom, and that was our last moment with him. And seeing the remnants of this unhoused young man and the things, the few property items that were so important to him, a broken Power Rangers watch, two crumpled dollar bills, you know, he was wearing a Seahawks shirt representing his state. These were the things that were locked away for all that time. And so that's when I became emotional. That was a time where all of a sudden I just felt a kind of like this weird energy. And I realized Jesse was there. He was there, and knowing that somebody took enough time and care to bring forward this trial.
Right.
And that is, you know.
But that's okay, right? Because that's an emotion that anybody would feel. That's not something that you do. But what we talking about is the emotion of lashing out. That's what we talking about, because exactly. You know, you could be right next to that person. Like I said, you could be on the elevator with them. You could be like, it's a lot that happens. And when you do too much, like, right? Like, no, what you're saying is what, you know, any person that lost somebody would do. Like, certain things are going to make you really realize that the person is not there no more, even if it's been a while. You know, it's just certain things that trigger those emotions. But one of the hardest things to do, like I said, is when you are the person fighting for someone who's not here no more, is to actually have to share space, time, and everything else with the person who actually did it. That's what I'm saying. You know, we all face things each and every day that we don't, you know, that is tough. And some things may be more tougher than others to people. But that's got to be one of the toughest things that a parent can do, is to actually be in a space with a person each and every day that they know were responsible for taking their child's life. And this is what I'm saying, because a lot of these parents are dealing with this, and that is their only child, right? It's not like they get to be a grandparent. It's not like they get to continue their legacy. It's like they have to really look at the stunt of their the growth of their family.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what's sad.
And, you know, you were saying about the elevator. So during one of the breaks, I was texting on my phone and getting into the, no, it was at the end of the hearing. So I'm texting on my phone and I'm walked into the elevator and I looked up and it was Officer Nelson, his bodyguard, and this woman who I found out later was his wife. And I looked up and I said, fuck it. I'm going in that elevator. And I went in. And for that short moment, Nelson says, what floor? I'm like, what floor? Like, one, we're going to the lobby. But he pushes one, and that 30-second ride down was so powerful. Because this man's like 6-something, I'm 5-something, and I didn't cower. I didn't walk out of that elevator, and I went down to the lobby with him. And it was so important for me because he needed to know that he wasn't making me afraid. And it was pretty powerful. And then I do want to go to Conviction Day. It's important for everyone to hear what it was like on Conviction Day. So on Conviction Day, we had a thing called deliberation. And if people aren't aware of that, that is when then the jurors take the information and they, before deliberation, I'm sorry. The state did their story. They brought forward their case and they have to prove without a burden of doubt that this man is guilty. On the day that the defense was supposed to bring all their witness and start their part of the trial, which would have been another 3 weeks, they rested.
I remember we talked about that last show, and that's what was really different about your case, which is why I say in a lot of instances, if that particular part of it probably won't always happen for most people.
No.
That's the one part of your case that I realized. I was like, well, you know, for a lot of people, they're probably not going to get that part that would be rested right there. You know, other people are going to have to deal with a little bit more than that, because like I said, that was very rare that happened, because it doesn't normally happen, especially not with police officers, because they stick together so much and they have so much pull and so much different things that they use everything they can to their advantage if they can. And the fact that they did that was really rare. So yeah, I want other people. That's why I'm saying it's important about our emotions. I want to make sure that we, regardless of what part of the case that you had to be in, and this is the same thing for people that's going through it, because the outcome for you was conviction.
Right.
But there are people who we know that I've had on the show who gone through things, and there was no conviction. It was even no indictment. They had a secret jury that they picked, and they did this little thing. They didn't even bring no witnesses, nobody in. They did their thing, acknowledged that it wasn't happening. Boom, next thing you know, all charges are dropping. It's moving on, right? And these people are just left with just the fact that their child has been unalived by somebody, and they had no idea. So what I'm saying to you is that, yes, it's important for people to know that he was convicted or what happened on Conviction Day, but not more so than it is for people to understand what it will take for them to get to that day.
And it is hard. I mean, it's that if I didn't have support from community, if I didn't have support from people like yourself who gave us a platform, there were a lot of different intersectionality during this journey. And right. Yes, a lot of people fell off. You know, I would all of a sudden have someone not unalive me, but all of a sudden, no communication. I was like, whoa, where did you go? What happened? It's the longevity of it. And I tried to have humility. I tried to understand that, yes, they were in the fight here, but they jumped off here. I can't speak on that.
Right.
However, during deliberation, when we were waiting, this was really important. A community person did a fundraiser for us to buy lunch because we're not going to leave the courtroom. They said, oh, you guys could go out for lunch and we'll give you 20 minutes to get back. Well, I live more than 20 minutes away. There's no way I'm going home. I don't trust. Right. We sat up court upstairs. We just pulled a couple tables over, and lunch would be delivered, and we would sit there and talk and eat lunch and welcome anyone that wanted to come and sit with us, because we don't know when we're going to be called back in.
Right.
So it was, I think, 3.5 days, and then we were finally notified that the jury's returning. And this is when one of the young ladies finally got a chance to show her emotions, because she is all about FTP. She's ACAB and FTP, and it was hard for her to hone that in. And when we heard the first conviction, and that was guilty on second degree murder, she started crying. And then first degree assault, guilty. And we were just, that was when we all just kind of like, our whole energy just finally was allowed to be able to say thank you. And the prosecutor turned around, the lead prosecutor, and she walked to me, and I stood up and we hugged in public. I mean, it was very emotionally charged. And that is that was very pivotal, because then we knew the next part of this would be sentencing. And that was going to, they were going to have sentencing, I think it was 10 days later. We waited 6 months. But at that moment in time, he was arrested. They tried to say that he should go home and be able to be on paid administrative leave, and the judge wasn't having it. She's like, no, he's convicted murderer now. So he was handcuffed and taken into custody. So he's, and I found out later, he was then also taken off pay. We didn't know, but Auburn Police Office Department stopped paying him on conviction day. We found that out later.
Wow. That is amazing. Listen, I mean, just me personally, man, I mean, to go through all three steps of this with you, because when I first had the conversation with you, you were going through jury selection. And to where you are now, to a full conviction, I mean, on both counts, too, of what he was charged for. And how much time did he get?
So when we finally came back to sentencing, that's when we got to do our impact statements.
Okay.
And so I had been writing my impact statement for 4 years.
I mean, I'll show.
It changed times. Because
tell the people what an impact statement is.
Oh, I'm sorry. An impact statement, four on the prosecution side and four on the defense side, get to get up and say something on behalf of Jesse or behalf of Jeff Nelson. But you can mail in them too. So a lot of people were able to email them, and the judge will read them all. I got copies of the impact statements. And so it was a time for her to also, I didn't see that statement. What was that statement? Love that he was taken that way and treated that way in court. Yeah, it was very important that people need to see that he went from a presumed innocent man to an actual guilty man. And that day forward, in my impact statement, I started off by calling him Officer Jeff Nelson. And then I said, I transitioned into Mr. Nelson. I still kept a formality, but I was able to then realize y'all not a cop no more.
Right.
You know, and it was a hard thing. One of his brothers actually was able to come. He was out of state, so they were able to zoom him in to be able to say something, his brother. Then his other younger brother spoke so elegantly, Colton. And then his foster sister, Amelia, she rocked it. She slayed her statement. Anyone that was giving an impact statement had to be someone that knew the living, breathing Jesse. And so there were a lot of people that kept saying, can I do it in person? And I had to explain to them, I only have that 4 spots. Anybody that watched my impact statement, I don't know if you guys saw it, but I got up there and the first thing I do is I turn towards Nelson. And the judge, like, Miss Simons, face me. You cannot look at him. So I had to turn back. Halfway through my impact statement, and if any of you guys watched the live feed, when I said that Jesse went from hashtag Jesse Saray to justice served for Jesse, porn came across. It was the worst case of porn. Someone hacked in and they had to shut down the Zoom. And the judge and I aren't aware of this, right? We're looking at each other, but the audience is like, you know, people are just like, oh my God. And so finally they try to bring it back on again and they came back in again. So the judge says, ma'am, I'm really sorry. We're going to need to take a break. We got to figure out what just happened here. We'll start, you finish your impact statement when you come back in. And I'm like, what the hell? And I, and even the defense, when they came back, try to blame me. They're like, oh, Miss Simons, when she said hashtag, she had it ready to go. I was like, why would I bring porn in during my impact statement? You know, it's like, please.
I want to ask you what kind of porn it was, but I guess that ain't important.
Woo!
But look.
Hardcore. Hardcore. Everybody, I mean, we're all just like, So
I'm sure everybody didn't cover their eyes. Yeah, I'm sure.
Now, the reason it happened was they don't usually do Zoom. They usually do WebAir.
Oh, okay.
But because the brother was, that was the only way the brother was able to make his statement. And so they had to take down the Zoom afterwards, and they had to explain to him that that's what's going to happen, that he couldn't come back. Yeah. So
That's hilarious, but this is what we want to do, because you gave out a lot of great information tonight, right? Because let's be honest, a lot of these things, you've been able to make it from the start all the way to the finish line. Like, there's a lot of people whose finish line get finished for them, right? Yeah. And without nothing. So I think that a lot of people should have got a lot of information from you tonight. And I know that the playback will be great for a lot of people, because, you know, you talked all the way from the beginning all the way up to sentencing in this hour, and you were able to give people real nuggets, which will probably be the most important, because each trial is going to be different. Each atmosphere is going to be different. Each, you know, everything is going to be different, right?
And sentencing structure also
is going to be different.
This is the first police officer to be sentenced in 85 years. So there was no guideline. There was nothing to say what a police officer with second degree murder and first degree assault would get. And I started following cases of people who had similar charges. Mm-hmm. And ours, we didn't get the gun enhancement. And that would have been another 10 years. And that was because he was a police officer. He had legal rights to a gun. So we lost 10 years. And then, so we started losing some years. So we got 16.8 years, I believe it was. And so, I mean, that is significant. But then another murder trial just wrapped up and they got like 25 to life.
Wow.
So you can see the discrepancy about sentencing structure on a police public servant. The last thing that we got that we fought really hard for was decertification. We did not want this person to still be a certified police officer. And so I was looking forward to that. That was my last thing, was to go forward. Yes, Miss Elaine, is always a wealth of information. Thank you. Thank you, Bridget. So that was the last piece, was I wanted that decertification, and I was waiting for that. And guess what? He voluntarily gave it up.
Good. Good job. Well, look, this is what we want, because, like I said, I think it's a lot more that you may be able to help talk people through. So if the people that are watching tonight, or the people that are watching, you know, the playback, if they needed to get in contact with you just to be able to probably talk through some things to see if you were familiar with the things they're going through or going through, how could they do that?
On Facebook, there's the Justice for Jesse Facebook group. So you just Google that. We also have a website. I don't do good memory. I think you might be able to put that out there for people.
I will.
So we have a website, and then you can email me. I don't want to give out my phone number.
That's fine. But no. But people could find you on Facebook, right? Under Lane. Oh no, Simons and Lane.
Simons Lane. That was another thing. My Facebook was taken down, and we believe that was taken down from.
Yeah, we know why. And so now that you're on there, it's just your last name first and your first name last, for people to be able to contact you on Facebook, because, you know, what we want is for people to be able to have an outlet, right? Because like I said, you know, you went through everything from the beginning to the end. You didn't miss a day. And, you know, there's people who are going through it or will go through it, and they probably will need to, you know, just every now and then be able to contact somebody that they know that's been through it. Because you think about it, there's so many people out here giving advice to stuff that they ain't never did. They ain't gone through it, but yeah, they studied it, right? We're they 1%. Studied it, but they never went through it, you know?
We're 1% of the nation that made it to this point. Right. I had two very important people in my life, and I don't mind sharing who they are.
Yeah.
There's Corey Jones' auntie. Her name is Sheila Banks. She got 28 years on the conviction and sentencing of her nephew that was murdered in Florida. The other person that was very helpful and instrumental was Oscar Grant's uncle, Uncle Bobby. Both those people were on speed. Oh, I think that's Sheila right there.
Yeah.
Is that my girl Sheila? I just gave you a shout out.
Yeah, she did.
Oh, I love her. So basically, those two people were on speed dial. I'm in that car. I'm driving home. Oh, my God. Oh, my gosh. You know, I had to call somebody. I had to be able to bring myself down because I was walking back in my home with my mom, who had dementia, and my father. I mean, not my father, my sister. You know, so I had to be able to bring myself back in my home and then get ready to go back out the next day. Right. So those two people were so powerful. And when I traveled the nation, most of the families that I really reached out to were other families who have gone through a murder trial.
Gotcha.
They were the people that had my back. And, you know, in this movement, just like any other movement, there is division. There are people who are like, why Jesse? And my answer has always been, why not Jesse? This is for all of us. And we have to embrace that. And I know it's hard. I know it's hard for families to say, you know, why your case? Why did it go there? I don't know, but it did. And you know what? It saved another life because he's a 3-time murderer. He killed 2 other men before he killed Jesse. So,
right.
So it stopped that murdering from happening again.
That's right.
And so that's why, you know?
Yeah. And sometimes, like we say, timing is everything. It's not on us, right? Because like I said, it's a few things that happen in your trial that, you know, just don't normally happen in those scenarios. So we gotta just allow things to be sometimes and just stay focused in your space where you need to be. So what I want people to do is I want people to make sure that they reach out to you. For those of y'all that are watching tonight, thank y'all so much for jumping on. And we want to make sure that, like we said, Elaine is wide open. She will definitely help you talk you through things because, like she just said herself, she had to be talked through things. So she knows exactly what it's like to need help, too, just for people to vent to try to help talk you through things for things that they've gone through. So she know that because she had those people do it for her. So don't hesitate to reach out to her. Don't hesitate to try to, you know, get some enlightenment if you guys can, and just stay focused out there, okay?
I also want to remind people,
mm-hmm,
we were not a high-profile case.
Mm-mm.
We were grassroots. And it was being brought on podcasts like yourself.
Right.
It was working with a different level. We
right.
had to really, I mean, I never understood why did we not get the same kind of national attention? I mean, New York Times, I think, did 2 articles, but we never made it on CNN. We never were considered right. high profile. And yet, we are the first in 85 years in the state of Washington to get a police officer sentenced. To
exactly.
me, that is high profile. But
that's
to the
crazy.
Families that don't believe that they could do it at a grassroots level, we did it at grassroots level.
Facts.
It's possible. Make
Facts.
Sure that you don't get distracted and think because your loved one isn't getting that CNN or getting the certain lawyers out
there
that are on these big cases,
yeah,
your loved one is just as important. Yes, I love you, Sheila. Sheila's my girl. We're going to see each other in New York in September.
Yes, yes, yes. So, yes, thank you. So I'm glad you said that. That was very, very important. You know what I mean? Like what you just said. And so, yeah. So all the people that watch tonight, thank y'all so much for joining us tonight. And make sure, like Elaine said, you know, just stick with it. Don't let no look be in every aspect of it that you can. We know it's hard. We know it's going to be tough for you. Try to find your support system. If you don't have a support system, reach out to the impacted families, because it's a lot of different things that they're doing. And I encourage y'all, if you need to find them, all you got to do is look at the hashtag impacted families on Facebook. I have talked to so many of them, and I know I have content out there that you can get in contact with a lot of the impacted families, and they can get you where you need to be. And yo, listen, we're going to continue to fight, man, for impacted families on Sparking Conversation. If you yourself, if you know anybody out there who has a story that they would like to get out here and at least talk to me and we can make it happen, all you got to do is hit me up at sparkingconversation@gmail.com. Make sure you put in the subject line guest and then put a little bit about in the body of it, what you want the guest to be about. And yo, we can work you in. We'll get you on. All right. Because that's what this platform is for. And like Elaine said, they didn't get national coverage from everybody else, but I was one of the only ones that allowed them to come on the platform, and it did so much for what they had to do. And I'm thankful that I was given the opportunity to even interview them or have a conversation with them, for it to be the first in 85 years and to be the first on my platform. That is amazing. So thank you so much, Elaine, for choosing me. Let's continue to stay in contact like we have been throughout the years. Let's continue to bring awareness. And there's other shows coming down the line that I'm going to have you on as a guest. So let's just continue to build. And thank you so much again for being a part of the show.
Thank you. I always love being your guest, and we're going to meet in person one day.
Oh yeah. Facts. We got to make this shake. You know? We got to, I have a thing with all the impacted families. We're going to work it out. Cause everyone has been saying that they want to meet me in person. So we're going to definitely put it together. And, you know, I'm just thankful that you guys feel that strongly enough about me that you would like to meet me in person. So I don't take it for granted. I'm very humbled by it, and we're going to make it happen for real. So without further ado, you guys out there, stay safe. Elaine, just have a great one. And to everybody, y'all know what I say each and every week. If you don't believe in yourself, nobody else will. So until next week, y'all, peace.
Bye.